T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Hey, Todd here, WTIC. Hope you're having a good afternoon, enjoying the warm weather, and enjoying the radio programs going on here all day long with our new schedule on News Talk 1080. Chris Powell writes for the Journal Inquirer. I'm sure you know his voice and know his work. It's a great time to talk to Chris because we've got this problem going on with juvenile crime, and it's a frustrating problem because the issues are so obvious and nobody wants to do anything to fix them, apparently. And this really burns Chris's butt. So let's talk to Chris Powell about it right now on WTIC News Talk 1080. Hey, Chris, thanks for being here.
Great to be with you, Todd, as always.
You are, I've decided, the closest thing to a radio talk host who doesn't talk on the radio and doesn't have a microphone. And I think that's the maybe why there's a natural synergy for us. You write about the things that we talk about in talk radio, and you tend to get these certain aspects of how public policy is done that really irk you. So let's talk a little, because juvenile crime is such a big issue and juvenile courts and laws and all that, let's dig into that a little bit and tell us what upsets you about the way Connecticut does policy.
Well, the big problem with juvenile court in Connecticut, Todd, is that everything in it is secret. So you can't hold anybody accountable for anything that happens. This is starting to bother the public, and even Democrats are a little bit worried about it. Now we see all these local town council meetings where the public is coming forward to complain about the car thefts and burglaries and robberies that involve juveniles who can't be punished. I think this issue is resonating with the public. But I don't think it's resonating with the government. I don't think the government wants to pry open this can of worms, because that's what you'll find in it. Back at the end of May, we had the killing of the 53-year-old jogger in New Britain, Henrik Podelski, who was just out for his daily jog when he was run down and killed in New Britain by a stolen car that apparently was driven by a 17-year-old with a long criminal record in juvenile court, something like 13 offenses in 3.5 years, but who, some of them were serious offenses, but he was still free. There was a bit of an outcry over it, and the legislature acknowledged, this doesn't look good. The Republican leaders wanted a special session. The Democratic leaders didn't. They don't want to look into anything that might be so terribly wrong. Legislators agreed, okay, we'll have some discussions about it. Now it's gone away, and Goldelsky is safely buried. A former state legislator who's an expert in criminal justice was on another radio talk show a week or so ago, and he's a Democrat, and he acknowledged that the Guzelski case was terrible, and he said that somebody had really messed up here. Well, you know, of course somebody messed up here, but okay, who was it exactly, and how did he mess up?
Yeah, what's the nature of that mess up? Because and you know, you were saying that nobody wants to focus on it, and everyone hopes these things go away. But this seems like an issue that's not going to go away, doesn't it?
Well, I hope so, but I don't really see the legislators, even the Republican legislators, I don't think are likely to press this. If it's going to be pressed, it's going to be pressed by the public. But, you know, in this case for New Britain, yeah, somebody messed up, but it's illegal for us to find out who messed up, because our policy in Connecticut is to make sure that nobody employed by the government can ever be held accountable for anything. Now, here's somebody killed because the juvenile justice system could not put away a chronic offender after 13 offenses in 3.5 years, somebody who's plainly shown himself to be incorrigible, for whom there's, you know, not likely to be any rehabilitation. And we're not going to find out what went wrong, who exactly was responsible for this, who made the decisions, who let the kid out, who decided that after 13 offenses and 3.5 years, let's try some more home release or something like that.
Do you feel confident that transparency would straighten this out, that it's a judgment, it's a decision made by a judge in court rather than the way a law is written that ties their hands? Or is that the unknown that you want to discover?
Yeah, we can't do anything about a situation that we can't examine in detail. There's judges and social workers and prosecutors involved here. What did they do and why? Will anyone make them explain for themselves? But they can't, because everything is by law secret.
Is this not a standard thing among states to protect juveniles from having these kinds of things become public conversation?
For the most part, it is, Todd, and I think it's a totally false premise. From the beginning of civilization, secret trials were understood as inherently unjust
and unjust for the for everybody involved.
Suppose you've got a young defendant who's being railroaded. You're not going to find out if his trial is secret. You're not going to find out anything if these proceedings are secret. But we have this premise that, you can't expose any juvenile misbehavior because it'll ruin their lives in the future. Well, maybe it will and maybe it won't. But, Henrik Gudelski's life has been ruined. Doesn't that life count?
Yeah. And they're also, maybe it's more concerning now, the transparency issue, because there's a feeling that the powers that be aren't interested in holding people responsible. They're more interested in letting people get away with crimes and not being inside the criminal justice system. And this is a strange moment we're in terms of this kind of situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a crazy moment. The Senate President Martin Looney of New Haven, when the Republicans came out asking for a special session to investigate this juvenile justice failure, he accused them of just trying to beat up on minority urban youth. As far as I can tell from the video, the perpetrator in the New Britain case was white, and the victim was white. So, isn't it okay if white people care too? Looney was just trying to demagogue this issue to distract from any examination of what the juvenile justice system does. And now there's so many complaints by police officers around the state about repeat juvenile offenders who laugh when they get arrested because they know they're going to be let go immediately, and they go right back to stealing cars and joyriding because they know there's no consequences. And if you suggest there ought to be consequences, you're a racist.
We're talking to Chris Powell. We'll talk more right after this on WTIC.
Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
WTIC, we're talking with Chris Powell, and why not? He's great. Let's continue now on WTIC. We're talking about the problem with juvenile crime. And Chris, you mentioned that Democrats aren't going to do anything about it, and you said Republicans appear not to be prepared to do anything about it, that it would be members of the public who have to force a solution to this problem of juvenile crime. Is there no figure who you can point to who is driving your side of the story?
No, I don't think so. And nobody in authority. I am encouraged that a lot of people are coming out to local town council meetings and insisting that the authorities do something about the juvenile crime that's involved with repeat offenders, and all the town councils are saying, "Oh well, we're working with our police to have a task force on it, and we're writing to our legislators asking them to do something about it." In fairness, the town councils can't really do much about it. It's entirely a state legislative issue as to whether there will ever be any deterrence for juvenile offenders. But at least there is some concern among ordinary state residents. There was somebody at a town meeting, and it was on, I think, Channel 3 last night, who said it, his garage had been broken into once and his car had been stolen another time. People are afraid in their homes now. I think that's very good. I know Robin Porter, the state representative from New Haven, was sneering a few weeks ago that, nobody cared about repeat juvenile offenders until they started hitting the suburbs. And Porter said this has been going on in the cities for a long time. And I was wondering, well, then why the hell didn't you make an issue of this? I understand it's hard for Black legislators from New Haven like Porter to make an issue of repeat juvenile offenses by minority kids. But, if that's the demographic we're worried about in the cities where we have repeat juvenile offenses, I mean, well, why didn't she say something about it?
But why would that even be difficult? I mean, I understand there's this macro perception and movement to just treat the criminal justice system and police as a negative force and hostile to people who live in cities. But people who live in cities also want police to come when they call them, and they also want the kids who are, or whoever the bad guys are, who cause problem in their communities and make their children their safety be threatened, that they want to see the bad guys put away too, don't they?
Yeah, I think most of them do. Look, Eric Adams won the Democratic primary for mayor of New York on a platform of strengthening the police in the city, even though he was a victim of police brutality when he was a kid. Look, I read the state newspapers every day, and almost every day I find there's a murder, some shootings in one or all of our cities. There was a murder in Hartford yesterday. There was a murder in Bridgeport yesterday. If we're soft on crime, the primary victims of that softness are members of minority groups. White legislators particularly are afraid to get into the issue. Look, and I understand their fear. They're afraid being called racist for anything these days. So, we don't act on stuff that I think would be obvious to the public as requiring action. We got to get over that.
Well, what you're describing, though, is a political system where everybody is ruled by their fears rather than their responsibilities and also their political opportunities.
Well, accusations of racism are carrying the day now. And, sure, there's racism out there, but it's not racism to complain about repeat offenders who are not put away after, you know, 13 offenses in 3.5 years.
But there's also a need for people to dig a little deeper, to not sit just at the top layer of the race atmospherics, but to drill down a little bit and to understand what's actually going on and who's being hurt and why they're being hurt and to fix those problems. So the cries of racism that cause people to not have discussions and not solve problems hurts everybody, including those communities who supposedly are being protected. So we've got to figure out some way to solve problems and not have everybody be intimidated by the great bomb throwing of accusations of some kind of ism. And I would just wonder, because you've been writing for so many hundreds of years, that you might look at another period of time and say, it didn't used to be this way. It used to be people stood up and did what was difficult because it needed to be done. Is that not true?
Well, I don't think the caliber of our leadership right now is very high. That's true. I think it's lower than it used to be. But, you know, yes, you know, we should go, you know, beyond the, you know, the superficial and the immediate issue here. To me, the real underlying question here is, where are all the messed up kids coming from? I mean, I think I know where they're coming from. They're coming from, you know, single parent families,
messed up homes,
you know, child abandonment, a welfare system that, you know, steals fathers away disproportionately from minority kids, though from white kids as well. And that's the issue, I think really the underlying issue that we can't discuss. You know, I always get a cynical chuckle over the group in Hartford that calls itself Mothers United Against Violence. Nobody ever asked, where are the Fathers United Against Violence? Well, you know, they're nowhere to be seen. There is no such group.
Yeah, but if all those things, if all those public policy issues and the results that they've wrought are responsible for creating homes that create problem kids, all the more reason for the power structure to stand up for order. Order is such a difficult thing to achieve in society. And it seems that everybody drops the ball all the way along the line. Why don't the powerful, why don't those in positions of power stand up for what's right and stand up for law and order and make everybody happy? It would just be such a relief.
Well, I think it's partly here in Connecticut, Todd, because, you know, the Democrats are in control and their goal is the expansion of government and its employment. They seem to want every kid to have his own special education teacher, you know, his own therapist,
his own special plan
worker,
for education, yes.
You know, his own police officer, his own public defender, his own probation officer, but no parents. Well, you know, if the kids have parents, they tend to do okay.
If the kids had parents, they'd be okay. If the government was responsive to problems instead of just running the government to serve its own needs, to serve the needs of politicians, we would be okay. And I think everybody has to understand this is our frustration. This is why everybody's so frustrated and why things have gotten so divisive, is because government doesn't do government. It just sells emotional memes to get people on their side. Chris Powell, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Todd.
Stay tuned. We got much more coming up. We're going to get a news update and then talk on WTIC.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Listen to the podcast on WTIC.com/podcast.
WTIC, happy that you are here. 860-522-9842. The rant line number, 751-4698. The rant line comes up during the 5 o'clock hour. George in Canton has been on hold. Hello, George.
Well, greetings, Todd. You know, Todd, you know the old saying, the tail wagging the dog.
Yes.
I just Googled up, you can do this very quickly, what percentage of people in the country have peanut allergies? Well, it's 0.6%. Now, two or three, 4 years ago, a few parents, I guess, said that their children had peanut allergies at the Dunkin' Donut Park in Hartford, and they banned peanuts. So 99.4% of the people can't eat peanuts because of the 0.6% that are allergic. Now, that's not even the tail wagging the dog. That's the hair on the tail wagging the dog. So the word of the current time today should be offended, because all of these little minorities are offended. But what about us? I mean, pretty soon the vegetarians are going to say at the parks you can't serve hot dogs.
You follow my train of thought. Yes, but, you know, numbers make me nervous because they're so deceptive, and they can appear to create clarity when, in fact, they're doing the opposite. So I Googled it. It says 1.2% of the population suffers peanut allergies overall, and 2.5% of the pediatric population, but it's the most common food allergy in children. And I want to see, I haven't found yet what the percentage is in kids, but I think that the freak out related to peanuts is related to children and their vulnerability.
Well, be that, look, Todd, look, I had two children. This Rita's recent thing in Cheshire, where this little boy got run over from the ice cream truck. Now, look, I've eaten at many an ice cream truck. They passed a law because one child was killed. Now, I'm sorry for that.
So that's a whole different situation. That might be the kind of knee-jerk pandering legislating that legislators love to do, because it makes them look like they actually can solve problems.
Well, and that's the point, though. Well, you suppose if Hallmark Cards gets offended that they can't sell Mother's Day cards anymore, something might happen? I mean, this is beyond, it is just beyond anything logical. And I refuse to cooperate. I'm offended. I'm not going to
say. Well, I don't blame you for not wanting to cooperate. I don't want to cooperate. I think most people don't want to cooperate with stuff that is political pandering and destructive to the fabric of our culture. And you have to feel that on some level the Democrats are determined to tear apart American culture, because they get to put it back together in the form they choose, which is always a pander to a voting bloc. It's not about the best interests of the country. It's about how they can win votes.
How about this? Since we are primarily a Democrat voting state, aren't most of these automobiles being stolen just by statistics? Aren't they going to more be stolen from Democrats if there's more of them? And they're not passing laws to protect themselves.
But of course, this is what Democrats do. They do things that get them votes, but don't actually improve the lives of the people for whom they're doing the pandering. Again, back to the cities. Democrats run the cities. Cities are beacons of violence and broken families. And bad education and problems with policing.
Glastonbury and Rocky Hill and Newington are not inner city, and that's where the cars are being stolen. I guess those places are being underserved by the legislators, huh?
Well, they underserve everybody they serve. That's their number one product, is underservice. Isn't it funny that the Democrats announced throughout COVID how they were going to be all over the urban areas to make sure the underserved communities weren't underserved by vaccines, and they couldn't do anything about it?
Yeah, well, Todd, there's no more words left.
George, thank you so much. Nice to hear from you. 860-522-9842. I got something I want you to hear along these lines. Listen to this little girl. This is what the Party of Compassion delivers for product. listen to her. She is so, she's so awesome, and she's so poised, and she's so living a nightmare, and yet seems to have it in a good place. It's remarkable.
I just saw people looking that way. And
she's talking about a shooting she just experienced.
I just saw people looking that way, and I didn't know what was going on until I heard someone say get down, so I just started going under the seats.
Oh my gosh, how are you feeling?
It was my second shooting, so I was kind of prepared, because I always am expecting something to happen.
Did you hear her? This is the norm that they have created in urban America.
It was my second shooting, so I was kind of prepared, because I always am expecting something to happen.
There is something magical about her, because she's so undamaged by the horror that she is forced to live with. She's got a spirit that allows her to float on top of the tidal wave rather than get bowled over by it. And there's something just beautiful about her. But it's not beautiful, the life she has to lead. It's not proper that this should, that permanent bad policy and permanent failure should be made acceptable through whatever trickery and treachery the left uses to make this stuff all seem normal and right, and to somehow communicate that they are fighting to protect the communities that they do this harm to. I just find it amazing. One more time, because she's so beautiful.
I just saw people looking that way, and I didn't know what was going on until I heard someone say get down, so I just started going under the seats.
Oh my gosh, how are you feeling?
It was my second shooting, so I was kind of prepared, because I always am expecting something to happen.
Wow. Does that not hit you somewhere? All right, another story we have to talk about today, Wallet Hub. Are you familiar with Wallet Hub? We talk about them from time to time. They're not actually a data company, but they do data crunching all the time to promote their website. I think it's a place to apply for financial services, like if you need a refi or something like that. Anyway, their latest data that came out today, I think, is rating states on the best and worst states to start a business. And there's kind of sad news for Connecticut, because as much as the Democrats try to put Connecticut into last place, they often fail and end up in 49th place, which is what happened with this rating for the best and best place to start a business. Here are the top states. This is an interesting list. Texas, number one. You know, the reviled Texas run by those morons who don't know how to do COVID policy. Yeah, where they have a way lower death rate than Connecticut. Texas, number one. Georgia, number two. California, number three, which we'll come back to, because California is really interesting. Why is a horrible high-tax state that's just bursting at the seams with trouble? Why is it one of the best places to start a business? We'll talk about that. Number four, Florida. Another state that's looked down upon by the wizards in the Jolly Ned administration. Remember when Ned was making regular comments during his press conferences about what Neanderthals they were in Florida and Texas, because their death rate was in the 23-24 range, not up in the number three range like Connecticut used to be? Remember that? And so Jolly Ned used to like to throw barbs at them to create the illusion that there was something wrong with Florida and Texas and something right with Connecticut, when the reverse was the fact. This is how they play. Anyway, Florida, number four, best place to start a business. Colorado, number seven, high taxes, but still they managed to eke it out. 10, Massachusetts, high taxes. Still, as a high tax state, Massachusetts finds a way to be a decent place to start a business. Why is that? Same thing in Maine. Same thing in, where should we go next? Indiana? No. New York. 22. New York's down there in the middle. Hawaii, 23. What else stands out? Alabama, 31. Why is Alabama so bad? Because there aren't resources available for businesses. Vermont. 37th worst place, and Connecticut, 49th worst place in the country. One other state I want to note down here on this list is Rhode Island. Rhode Island is the 48th worst state to start a business, right ahead of Connecticut. It made me think about back when, during the COVID peak, when Ned kept talking about Gina all the time. He had to do what Gina, remember? He had to do what Rhode Island was doing. He had to do what Gina was doing, former governor. He had to do what Andrew was doing. He was always hiding behind the other states, and it looks like that's not such a productive thing, hiding behind Rhode Island, which is right there with Connecticut, down near the worst in the country. And the last mention is New Jersey, worst state in the country to start a business. Lots of resources there for business people, but the costs are out of control and the environment is hostile to business. So what's wrong with Connecticut? Connecticut has high resources. It's very similar to New Jersey. Connecticut is worse than New Jersey on the business environment. In fact, the business environment in Connecticut is judged by Wallet Hub to be 49th in the country. 6th for business resources, Connecticut is, but 47th. 47th in the cost of doing business. It is just a tragic thing that has been done to the future of the state of Connecticut, this kind of gross mismanagement. Now, the thing I wanted to tell you about California, which also applies to Massachusetts and Colorado and a few other states, but California is the behemoth, monstrous, out-of-control state that's been destroyed by liberalism. And May, you know that old Steely Dan line, California tumbles into the sea, that'll be the day I go back to Annandale. Well, California is tumbling into the sea politically. You know, in terms of its design, overwhelmed by immigration, overwhelmed by the cost of housing, overwhelmed by homelessness. They're just out of control with how mismanaged they are. But amidst their high taxation, California is the third best state in the country for business. Why? Because California knows, unlike Connecticut, which thinks business is bad, California respects business and helps startups, provides funding, and encourages and incubates small companies. And as a result, California corrects for the fact that it is more expensive even than Connecticut as a place to do business. But it's got a very supportive business environment, and there's great access to resources, number one in the country in California. It's interesting. It's fun to see this data when it comes out. It provides insights into what the hostility towards business on the part of the Democrats does and how there's very concrete policy. You can point to policy and you can say, if Connecticut cared at all about business, it could still maintain its hostility towards taxpayers, but encourage small business like California does, like Colorado does, like Massachusetts does. But it won't, because it just doesn't care. 860-522-9842. Quick break. We'll talk more on WTIC.
Todd Feinberg, now 2 till 6 on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Rant line number 751-4698. And we're taking live calls right now, 860-522-9842. Nice to have you here as we try to get a little summer vibe going here. It's nice to have a little summer vibe going on, isn't it? Sunshine, a little haze, a little warm weather, a little humidity. It's awesome. 860-522-9842. So I've got some rants left over from yesterday I'd like to play for you. If you would indulge me, we'll get a few of those going and we'll take some phone calls. All right?
Hey, Brother Todd, I got to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
How does Max Reese do this? I mean, is it expensive bottles of wine he's handing out? Is it gift cards to restaurants? I'm thinking, is he giving tickets out to the casinos to go see concerts or games? I mean, maybe he's going old school. Maybe it's just cash in an envelope like the old days. But, I mean, he's got Connecticut media prancing on their hind legs while promoting Lamont's diversionary tactics. I mean, backseat, you know, a law for a backseat seatbelt? You know, what's next? A law against underinflated tires?
So Mark is ranting about Max Rees, press secretary. I don't know if he's the press secretary or one of them, but he's the guy who Steve makes fun of when he goes, Todd, WTIC, News Talk 1080. He's doing his Max Rees imitation because Max's the guy at the press conference who does that stuff. Anyway, it doesn't take any genius. The media is withered down to nothing, but liberal writers and you know, most of the old experienced crowd is being weaned out because they're too expensive and there aren't enough reporters anymore to cover news, and they just do what they can do, and that includes a lot of going along with whatever the governor wants, because the governor is a source of information and power, particularly during COVID. So, you know, if they want to protect their jobs, they have to get the easy, free, fed information, the easy stories coming out of the governor's office. Peter in Middletown. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Todd. How you doing, man?
What's up?
Got a question for you. A moment ago, you were talking about the rate of vaccinations in the underprivileged, underserved communities, urban communities. And I was just wondering, are there any statistics that are out with regard to how many minorities, a percentage of minorities are vaccinated versus whites, Caucasian people that are being vaccinated?
And
Yeah,
go ahead, finish.
Well, just, you know, where's the death rates and percentages, black versus white or minorities versus white? I mean, and
yeah, that's pretty interesting.
The point I was getting to, I mean, if the people that are dying currently are the unvaccinated, and are they minorities for the most part? And if so, why aren't we seeing more minority influencers on TV and the radio urging people to get vaccinations? I don't understand what the disconnect is there.
Yeah, I don't know about the marketing campaigns. It's an interesting question, but I know they've.
At all.
Well, there were a few weeks ago. There were stories popping up, and through the winter, I guess, of different opinion leaders who were, you know, famous people, retired ball players, stuff like that. But I don't know where that's at right now. I mean, I think the Democrats are hiding from it because they failed, and one of the things that, to me, that they've revealed is they don't actually know how to do policy. If you look at COVID, where were Ned's big failures? Why is Connecticut one of the worst states in the country for the death rate and for the death of institutionalized seniors? And that's because Ned did nothing when the threat was there, when he had a moment where he could have done it, analyzed the situation and devised an action scheme that would have protected nursing homes. He was patsy, sitting there doing what the CDC told him and what Andrew Cuomo was doing. So he repeated the mistakes of the Cuomo administration, and he repeated the mistakes of what the CDC had for standard responses. And that's the kind of thing, that mentality of I don't really have to do anything but pose and make announcements, is what the governor brings. And I think they've got the same problem with urban areas where there's a strong aversion to getting the jab and where they've been resistant. And I think they just decided not to publicize it anymore and wait for the federal government to come in with their programs of going around and trying to pressure people to get vaccinated because the rates are so bad. That's my guess, but I haven't confirmed that yet, so I will. Thank you for the call. 860-522-9842. Yeah, because something's got to give. And this is one of the vulnerabilities Democrats have. And they don't talk about the areas where they don't have vulnerabilities unless they've got a good con, a good grift for making, for bringing sympathy their way from the key voters that they failed, which they're usually pretty darn good at, but they haven't figured out one yet for urban minorities. I don't think the underserved communities who they continue to underserve.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.